Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast on arseblog.com, September mailbag edition. Quite a lot to discuss since we did our August mailbag discussion. What is there to discuss, you ask? Well, Arsenal have played six games. They've won all six of them. They've qualified for the Champions League group stages. They've beaten Chelsea at Emirates Stadium on the opening day of the WSL. And they signed a little-known player called Tobin Heath, causing quite a lot of excitement. And for those that missed it, I recorded a podcast with journalist from Equalizer Soccer, Jeff Kasouf, about the signing of Tobin Heath. He kind of had the story before anyone else, and he's followed Tobin's career very, very closely. So a couple of weeks ago, I sat down with Jeff and just we had a little bit of a chat about Tobin, but we will have more Tobin chat today, as well as your questions that you submitted on Twitter. To myself, Tim Stillman. Sorry, I should have introduced myself at the top. And with me today, as ever, my co-host, Alex Ibaceta. Alex, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good. Can't be mad about six wins in six games. So it's been worse before. So
indeed. It's got that nice, like, honeymoon period feeling to it when you get a new manager and you get some good results and you sign some big players and things like that. So that's why I was really keen to do a podcast at the moment, just to capture that before everyone tears their ACL and we lose three games in a row and everyone wants the manager sacked.
Can't wait for that.
But before we dig into the mailbag and come to the listener questions, I think three things we should really address at the top of the podcast that I wanted to ask you about, really. First of all, just your initial impressions, I guess, of life under Jonas Eidevall with six games, six wins. And to be honest, five of those games you definitely would have expected Arsenal to win, I think. But the game against Chelsea, I think, was a real landmark for this period of the season. How have you viewed life under Jonas so far? And what are the things that you've kind of really picked out in this new era?
Yeah, as you mentioned there, kind of a lot of the games were kind of not, I wouldn't say lesser opposition, but it's those games that you would expect a team like Arsenal to win. And obviously against Chelsea, that was kind of the biggest test so far. But I mean, obviously six wins in six games isn't really bad at all. It's mostly when you look outside the results and you look at individual players and how they're thriving and you look at kind of the style of because now six games later, you kind of have a very, very clear idea of what Jonas wants to do with the team. And so far, I mean, I really love it. I think I like a lot more of a attacking style of football, but at the same time, it has to be very intelligent football, which I think Jonas is getting really, really well. I think he's using the players that he has really well. He understands what Viv likes to do, and Viv isn't just a sitting number nine that sits in between the two center backs. You know, he understands that Viv likes the freedom. Viv likes to drop. She likes to get the ball and distribute, and he's kind of adjusted to that. And then obviously he plays to the wingers, which I think Arsenal didn't do enough last season. If I'm being honest, there was a lot of times where I was frustrated that Arsenal didn't really switch the ball because one of their biggest strengths is their wingers. You know, when you have Beth Mead on one side, Caitlin Ford, now you have Nikita Paris, you know, Frida Manum can maybe get out there sometimes. Manu Ibuchi likes to, you know, like phase out there sometimes. And then you have the fullbacks. And I think that was kind of our biggest strengths last season. And we didn't use it as much as we probably should have. But now you see, I think, Tim, in your piece for Arsblog, when you mentioned how they switch the ball a lot quicker to that wing to exploit the spaces that they leave behind when a person like Viv is moving around and kind of having all the defenders chase around her. So I think so far, you know, the style of play is really, really good on the attacking aspect. Obviously, it's not perfect so far. You know, it's still only six games in the season and there's still a lot to correct and there's still a lot to settle into. But so far, given the six games so far, you know, that big one against Chelsea, it's looking really, really positive.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's difficult to disagree when you've won six games in a row. You know, Jonas talked a lot about bringing in more of a counter-pressing style, and under Joe, it was very, going backwards to go forwards and trying to draw opponents out. Whereas now it's clearly get the ball forward more quickly. And even if you don't get the pass right, pounce, counter-press. And I look at some of the attackers we've got, and I looked, you know, before we started playing in the summer, and I thought, I think we've got some forwards who can really do that in Beth, in Caitlin, in Nikita, Viv, got Jordan to come back, superb kind of pressing player. We've seen a bit of Frieda Marnham now in an Arsenal shirt, and physically just really, really up to the level in terms of that kind of counter press. And I've been really impressed with that. I think the thing I've liked the most from talking to Jonas, I asked him about, you know, against Reading, Arsenal opened the scoring from a corner with Jen Beattie. And that was a frustration for me last season, or in the last couple of seasons, that Arsenal didn't make more of those situations. When you've got players like Beth, Katie McCabe, Steph Catley, who can all deliver a great ball, and you've got someone like Jen Beattie in the 6-yard area, you should be creating more danger from set pieces. And I asked Jonas about that, and because he'd said after, I think, the PSV game, he was asked about the goals, which were all nice goals in that game. And he said, yeah, but these are the goals you expect Arsenal to score. I want more goals from corners. I want more goals from crosses. I want more goals from counter-attacks. And I think that's what I like, that the fact that he clearly has a style and a philosophy, but he's quite willing to be pragmatic. And we saw that, for example, in the last 20 minutes of the Chelsea game, when it got to 3-2 and the job was to defend, that's what happened. It was just, okay, that's fine. We're not going to try and pass out from the back during this period. We know that the game does not demand that. The game demands get it clear for the last 15, 20 minutes. And they did that. And that's what I've been enthused about, the kind of adaptability. So we've had, we're recording this on Tuesday, I believe. I'm losing track of the days of the week already. And the draw for the Champions League group stages was made on Monday, and Arsenal have drawn Barcelona. Nice, easy 6 points there for Arsenal. Hoffenheim from Germany. And the Danish team, who's, I'm really sorry, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of Kurge, I think. I'm certain I've got that completely wrong. But, big kind of Champions League group there. So obviously, a couple of really exciting glamour ties with Barcelona. Alex, obviously you have, I wouldn't say split loyalties, but shared loyalties between two of the teams in this group with your Barcelona hat on. What's your reaction to this group and your impression of Arsenal's chances?
Honestly, I'm just so excited. I would like to think that I'm going to go into this game as a neutral just because I love both teams so much. So I can't really commit to one side. I think I'm just going to try to enjoy it as much as I can as a football fan, and just, you know, from a football aspect of, you know, tactically, I think it's going to be a really interesting match to watch. Barcelona, obviously probably the most tactical, intelligent teams that there is at the moment in women's football. And then Arsenal have always been technically ahead than a lot of other teams, I find, especially in English football. So I think in general, it's going to be really, really good matchup. I'm certainly excited. I think as much as I think that Barcelona would probably win, I don't think it's going to be as clear as most people are probably expecting it to be. Particularly because, as you mentioned there, Tim, you know, the set pieces are really, really good for Arsenal. And then you have players like Jen Beattie, you know, Leah Williamson, even Viv now, who's scoring headers more and more, who can get into the box and kind of disturb them. And when you look at Barcelona's preseason, especially when they went to the States, I think it was out of 6 goals that they conceded, 4 of them were from set pieces. And it's just been their struggle all along. So when you see little things like that, when you look at the weaknesses of Barcelona, you know, their fullbacks are pretty much the weak. Well, when a team like Barcelona, we say weakest, it's quite literally the weakest term, just because everyone else is just so much higher that, but like their fullbacks are probably the weakest position on their team. And then when we were talking, when you have Beth Mead on the wing, when you have Nikita Paris on the wing, Caitlin Ford on the wing, you know, I think Arsenal can exploit a lot of the weaknesses that Barcelona have. Equally, when you look at Barcelona's midfield attack, you know, it's going to be a really big challenge for Arsenal, because I don't think they've come up against this opposition in a very, very long time. I think that's anyone when they play Barcelona, you know, it's really rare to come up against an opposition like Barcelona and the way they're playing at the moment. So, I mean, that's all just to say that I'm really excited. And I think it should be, I think Arsenal fans should be a lot more excited than scared. I think they should expect a really good game and not just Barcelona blowing over like they did against Chelsea in the Champions League final. But yeah, it should be a good game just overall. I think Arsenal fans should be really excited about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got some questions later in the show about that. A couple of big things, I guess, have happened, but it probably says a lot about Vivian Miedema's quality that we're kind of brushing over the fact that she reached 100 goals for Arsenal in just 110 games, 97 starts. Of that 100, 49 on her right foot, 41 on her left foot, 10 with her head. I mean, you know, that's not bad, really. But
it's very casual.
Yeah, exactly. And all taken very casually. But the thing we really have to address, I think, and surprisingly, we have no questions about this. And I think it's just because the signing kind of happened and we haven't seen her since. But Tobin Heath at Arsenal, just on, let's start with the kind of the more visceral, emotional reaction, because it all happened so quickly as well. What was your initial reaction when you heard that Arsenal were signing Tobin Heath?
Shock. So that was, I was on holiday in Barcelona last week, and the Tobin Heath signing was my first day in Barcelona. And I kind of promised myself that I would stay off Twitter and social media. And then obviously I got WhatsApp messages about the Tobin news, and I was just like, I'm sorry, I need to go on Twitter right now. Please just give me like 10 seconds to like adjust myself. I personally, just outside of kind of journalism, everything, I've been a Tobin Heath fan since I was like 14, like very, very young. I've always loved Tobin Heath as a player. I think she's one of the most interesting players to watch on the pitch. You know, she has that Joga Bonito style. She has that swag on the ball. She loves a good nutmeg. And she's very good on dribbling. And I don't know, she's just a very, very entertaining player to watch. So personally, it was really, really big. I'm just excited as a journalist and just to analyze everything that she does with Arsenal. But at the same time, when you look at how she'll fit in at Arsenal with the team that there is now, with the Jonas ball, that Ida ball, if you want to say, I think she'll fit in really, really nicely. And then you'll have, because honestly, like last season, it felt like Arsenal were that one team that didn't sign that big name and everyone was kind of worried about it. But I don't think Arsenal needed it. But obviously having Tobin Heath on your team is always going to be a big boost. So obviously there's not really many negatives that are going to get out of it. And I think the position that she plays is really beneficial for Arsenal. When you put her up against, you know, next to Vivian Miedema, who I think they're going to really like play next to each other. And then you have Manu Ibuchi, who's also very that kind of like swagger, kind of very chill player on the ball. So yeah, I mean, just excited. I mean, I feel like I'm saying that a lot, but I'm really, really looking forward to seeing Tobin Heath in an Arsenal shirt.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting because I went through, when I first heard about it, I mean, first of all, I was trying to get to the bottom of the story myself because I didn't have it. I didn't know. I was told a couple of days before the deadline that Arsenal might do something on transfer deadline day. And it was quite secretive. Usually when I get told that, I get a name or a clue, but this was very under wraps. Obviously, you were there as well when I asked, I think it was Aaron Dantino, after the Slavia Prague game, I asked him whether there was anyone coming in because I'd heard this, and he laughed it off. But what probably didn't come across in the print was that he had quite a big grin on his face when I asked him. So I did think, oh, there must be something going on because this is all a bit quiet. And at first I thought, but we've already got two right wingers in Nikita Paris and Beth Mead. But I think I've come round to the idea that like we're going to need a big squad this year with all the games and the lack of preseason and everything. And the question I asked Jonas, and I think I'll put it to you as well as someone who's followed her career really, really closely. I kind of said to Jonas, look, you didn't really have a gap here in the squad, but is it a case that if you can get Tobin Heath, you just get Tobin Heath and you don't really worry about, you know, the tactics, well, not even the tactics, but, you know, you don't worry about like squad building. You don't like get up your own ass about like squad building. If the opportunity to get someone like Tobin Heath is there, is that how you see it as well?
I think I'll do it from both perspectives kind of from a player and then as a coach slash team. You know, we saw Tobin Heath last season with Man United and she made a huge difference. I mean, when she got injured, Man United decreased a level of kind of quality in front of goal when they lost Tobin Heath. I mean, Tobin Heath is just, it's very cliche to say, but again, that American mentality of just pushing forward, wanting to win everything and kind of nonstop. So I think it is a case of, you know, no matter what, having a player like Tobin Heath on your team is going to just, it's going to be absolutely positive for on and off the pitch. But then from the other side, you know, Tobin Heath is, she's an older player now. She's a veteran. So I think coming to a team, like a very established team where, yeah, as you mentioned, Tim, that there's very little gaps. I think she's mature enough and like at the end of her career now where she understands what the team needs and what's best for the team. And if she has to sit out on the bench for a little bit to have a more tactical, you know, change, whether it be Beth Mead to press higher or just like things like that, I think she'll accept that. And I think she'll understand that, especially because there is so many games to play for Arsenal. You know, she's definitely going to be playing in the Champions League now, but then you also have the Conti Cup, the FA Cup, then you have the league. So I think she's also a player and an age at the moment where I think she's going to be more than understanding when it comes to kind of that team selection and kind of filling in the gaps that aren't really there. And she kind of knows in the position that she's in. So I think it's a really, really good signing just because it is, you know, it's a player of Tobin Heath's level. And also, as I mentioned, you know, it's at the stage where she's not going to kick and shout if she's not playing the amount of minutes that maybe, you know, she is a starting player at the end of the day. But at the end of the day, you do have established players at Arsenal who have already fit in under Jonas, for example. So I think it would be really good to see her play. I think she's a very level-headed person just outside the pitch in order to kind of just like ease into that and understand everything.
Yeah, and I think like from Arsenal's point of view, she's still going to be going back to the States during international breaks and things like that, and Arsenal will be able to afford to look after her, I think, a little bit and maybe not play her like the other side of the international break and things like that. But I also think, just to close on this subject, that it's got value in terms of there are a couple of players there who have 1 year left on their contracts at Arsenal and are waiting to see what kind of ambition Arsenal has. And I do think signing someone like Tobin Heath says that you're an ambitious club, and that's got a lot of value. And another one of the things Jonas said to me was, look, keeping those players is bigger than any recruitment that we can do, because if we lose Leah Williamson and Vivian Miedema and Jordan Nobbs next summer, that's a rebuild. And you don't want to be rebuilding every summer, and you don't want, and like trying to attract players when you've just lost players like that, like that's very, very difficult. And I do think that Tobin Heath might be viewed as a little bit of hopefully a retainer signing, if that makes sense, like as someone who convinces some of those players who are possibly on the fence about committing their futures. But that will all kind of play out in the fullness of time. So why don't we take a break there? And when we come back after the break, we will respond to your questions that you put to us on Twitter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Okay, welcome back to the Arsenal Women Askcast September Mailbag Edition Part 2, where we will answer the questions that you put to us on Twitter using the hashtag AWFC Askcast. And quite a few themes have kind of come up in the questions, which is always kind of handy from a host's perspective because it means I can kind of group them together. and actually, one of the first things that really kind of came up was the question of, I guess, backup to Vivian Miedema, which has been a real question during her whole time here, because when you've got a striker like that, it's really difficult to convince someone to come and be a backup to her. And she's spoken, I think, recently about, you know, the fact that she played nearly every minute last season. I think we could see at the end of last season that, you know, that that had taken its toll. So variations on the question from at AWFC, please. From Mariek Van Lith as well, at Mariek Van Lith. Sorry, I've probably butchered the pronunciation of your name as well. At KPunJ15 and at MaroonSkittle19. Love that as a handle. Basically all asking variations of the question about what Arsenal can do as backup to Vivian Miedema and how they can manage rotating her and perhaps not having to play her in every minute of every game. And for example, Mariek asks, what do you think as Beth as a backup number nine for Viv? It's a fair question and one that really could have been asked at any point over the last 2 years, I think. But how do you see the backup to that position so that hopefully we can manage Vivian Miedema a bit more carefully?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible. Ironically, I'm going to talk about Barcelona now, because they do it really well. And I think their style play fits Arsenal style play in terms of kind of the ball movement and kind of how they want their players to be positioned and the fluidity of movement sometimes. But when you look at them, sometimes Jenny Hermoso is obviously injured out for the start of the season. Asisia Oshuala is also injured. So they had no number nine, nor on the bench, nor, you know, anywhere. So what they did was kind of have Mariona, who usually plays on the left wing, start centrally as like a false nine kind of thing, but at the same time she doesn't stay still, so you'll have the left and right winger ending up in the middle, or you'll have one of the midfielders ending up as the nine, so that nine role kind of ends up for grabs, first come first serve on whoever wants to get in that position, kind of obviously organized mess, but essentially she was the central striker on paper and that would be kind of her starting position, but anyone can kind of move into that based on how the ball movement went and the position movement went. And potentially Jonas can explore that option, considering with the players that he had. Obviously, Beth is a good option because she used to play number nine. But then if you want her to start as a number nine, then shift out into the wing and then have, you know, someone like Frida Manum come to the middle. Caitlin Ford can also play that central striker position. You know, have Caitlin come into the nine, Beth out on the wing, and then have a player like Frida Manum go on the other wing. You know, it is completely possible. So without, you know, the obvious choice of signing a backup player to Vivian Miedema, that could definitely be another option that maybe Jonas explores. And with his freedom of, as you mentioned, Tim, his flexibility of like tactics and rotation and formations and style of football, I could definitely see that being an option potentially, maybe one day just trying a new formation without a number nine at all, you know, just leave Viv on the bench and kind of figure it out with the players that you have. In kind of that false nine, kind of free load number nine position, where players obviously need to know that they need to get in that position. But it is possible. If you go watch maybe like, I think the last Barcelona game, yeah, you have wingers starting as number nine and then you kind of adjust from that and it works well. But obviously you need to have that organized in order for that to work well. But I think the style of play and the way, especially the way Joe kind of formed Arsenal into that possession style of football, I think it could work really well under Jonas's instructions. So that would be kind of my biggest solution, sort of say, without actually signing a new player.
Yeah, I think he's got two options here, and we've seen a bit of both of them. So obviously he rested Vivian Miedema for the first leg of the Slavia Prague game, and it was Caitlin Ford that played up front, and she had Nikita Paris and Beth Mead outside her. And Caitlin, when she plays as a number nine, much more fixed, hold the ball up, fight for the ball, almost more traditional type number nine. I mean, in terms of her own goal scoring, I think she's probably more threatening coming off the wing, but she can do that kind of you know, hold the ball up, bring others into play. And she did that against Slavia. The other option, because Viv came off for the last 25 minutes, I think, against Reading on Sunday. And I kept a close eye on what happened. And it was Beth and Nikita Paris swapping, constantly swapping between the right wing and number nine, just based on where the ball was and who felt to go towards it. And we know Nikita Paris has played. She has done that role. You know, at Lyon, she was Ada Hegerberg's backup, essentially, as a number nine. Probably not her best position. She's probably better coming off the right, but it's an option. You can just start Caitlin and have a hold-up player. You can start Nikita and have a playing-on-the-shoulder player, or you can do that kind of fluid rotation, I think, that you spoke about, Alex. And particularly, if you have a front three of, like, for example, Caitlin, Beth, Nikita Paris, none of them really needs to have a fixed position. It takes some practice to do that, but I think that's probably the best avenue for Arsenal. Slightly different kind of slant with this question from the wonderfully named O2 Tobin Aguna at Laguna Beach on Twitter. Is the club taking the right approach, RE ticketing, for the Emirates games? Would the optics of a foolish stadium be worth more, and I think foolish stadium at Meadow Park, be worth more than the gate revenue from less than 10,000 tickets at the Emirates? So Arsenal played Chelsea at the Emirates. We had an attendance of about 9,000, which is a lot more than can fit into Meadow Park. But obviously for the Emirates is less than 1/6 of the capacity. Where do you stand on this?
I think it's a great idea to play at the Emirates. I don't think it's a bad idea. I think obviously when you look at the atmosphere there, and if the players start getting used to that, then you can kind of bring that home advantage onto there. And if you get enough people into there, it'll definitely bring the vibe. But I think my biggest criticism to the opening weekend in general, not just Arsenal at the Emirates, but just the opening weekend, all the WSL that played in big stadiums, with the marketing was awful. You know, you don't even know that a women's game is happening at these big stadiums, because there's not really, unless you're kind of involved in our own little women's football world, you don't really know. And that's not the whole point. The whole point is to, you know, women's football world fills up Borehamwood without any problem on a big stage. But when you go to the Emirates, which is, as you mentioned, Tim, you know, it's not even like, it's a very, very small percentage of the people that we get at Borehamwood versus the Emirates, you need to expand the marketing. You need to, the whole point of it is to bring more people into women's football and bring more people into those particular matches. And I think the marketing was just really, really not enough for what it was. Cause then you look at last season where you had 20 plus K people in the opening week and on the WSL. And this year we didn't get any numbers like that. So I think it could be really, really beneficial. Obviously, you know, Bournemouth is really, really special, and the vibe, the home advantage is just there for Arsenal. You know, it's the comfort, it's how close people are to the pitch. You know, it's unbeatable when you go to a big stadium like the Emirates, but at the same time, when you have 10K plus, you know, Arsenal fans chanting at you, when you're playing a team like Barcelona, for example, you know, that's unbeatable, and it's going to change a lot. But I just think if that's going to happen continuously, then the marketing and kind of the reach to people outside of women's football world, like our little bubble, as I like to call it, it needs to be a lot better, and it needs to be more committed to bringing a lot more people. Because yeah, you know, when you have 9K people at the Emirates Stadium, it kind of defeats the purpose of that atmosphere and what you want to get out of playing at a big stadium.
Yeah, I think on this one, initially I was really disappointed with the level of ticket sales. I do think there are some mitigating factors on this occasion. So last time when they did like lots of games to open the season in these big stadiums, they were able to announce it months in advance and really do a big run up. But because of COVID, a lot of these weren't confirmed until about 3 weeks before. So there wasn't that massive lead in time. I do think there is still a little bit of COVID hesitancy around return to football. Arsenal men's first home game of the season against Chelsea didn't sell out. There are a few thousand unsold tickets for that. And maybe we take for granted the extent to which people are really itching to get back to football stadiums. I think there are some people who aren't. But I kind of came away, I don't know to what extent, it's at least to some extent just the way the game went against Chelsea. I think it was kind of perfect in terms of Arsenal won, they played well, but there was a lot of tension in that last 20 minutes hanging on to the lead. And the way they sold the tickets block by block so that the fans were close together, and it was in front of the camera as well, which again was done intentionally. They sold all the blocks near the cameras. And some of the, I think some of the images that come away, like that brilliant image that one of the girls from Girls on the Ball took of Beth Mead wheeling away in celebration with the crowd, you know, in front of her. I do think that there is a value in that. And I do think that, I think it was a really worthwhile exercise because, first of all, you had like 9,000 really engaged fans. I was at that Spurs game a couple of years ago that has the WSL record attendance of 38,000. Now, granted, most of them were Spurs fans and they lost, but I got a lot of sense of people looking at their phones during the game, semi-engaged. Whereas in this game, I really got the sense that 9,000 people were really engaged and invested in the result. And I do think that has a value. Obviously, though, that's result dependent. If Arsenal had lost to Chelsea, then you'd probably say that this was a little bit of a wasted exercise. But I think they did take the right approach. The other thing they didn't do was give away loads of free tickets this time. They charged, you know, 12 quid, 6 quid. And we've got to, I think, move away from the free tickets thing. I think getting 9,000 people who came away really thinking they'd seen something special probably has more value than 30,000 people, most of whom just went to look at the stadium or have a day out. So, and I'll be interested to see. We know there's going to be at least one more game at the Emirates this year. The Barcelona game, I think, might be another candidate as well. And it'd be interesting to see if that attendance creeps up for those games. But it is a really interesting question that I don't think there's really a right answer to. But maybe there's a right answer to this question, which comes from Belinda at Belinda_AWFC. It's obviously still early into the season, but based on what you've seen from Arsenal playing under Jonas, is there anything yet that you think they need to improve on?
That's a bit hard. Obviously, since, as I mentioned, I was on holiday, so I haven't been able to see like a full match. I did stop mid. I was like walking up a hill. So I got to watch the last 30 minutes of the Chelsea Arsenal game.
I was running up a hill during that when my heart was going to be.
That is fair. I watched like 20 minutes of the first half. I was in a museum and I rushed through the museum while my girlfriend was going through it, and I just kind of sat in the corner with my phone watching the game. So I have gotten a decent scope, not much of a scope as I would like to kind of go into these little details, but what I've seen so far is that it's not much on what they need to improve on, but at the same time, you know, it is the start of the season and they do need to brush up on a few things, you know, get that sharpness of switching the ball, getting the ball up faster, that first pass when you get possession back. It has to be sharp. It has to be smart. So I think for me, just from what I've seen, it's not about improving. It's improving on like certain aspects. It's just improving as a whole. Because at the end of the day, it is the whole process of being under a new coach, getting new tactics. So I think once they kind of figure out individually and more, it's more on the pitch that the players need to figure out what they like and what they don't like and kind of build those relationships with each other. Once they get that going, I think it'll be a lot better and a lot smoother, a lot more natural for them to play in that style that Jonas wants to play. So I think it's more of that process of players individually getting a hold of what they like, what they don't like, and kind of communicating that to the teammates as well. So everyone kind of goes through the whole process together. So I think it's mostly that, just players getting used to and improving on those little things that would make this style of play with them just that much better.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a couple of things I'm keeping an eye on. One is obviously when you press high, you leave space in behind. And I'll be interested to see perhaps teams who are better on the ball than some of the teams we've played so far, with the exception of Chelsea, I think, or teams who are just better at counter-attacking. Sometimes the cupboard looks a little bit bare back there sometimes when a move breaks down. And I think, I wonder if like faster centre halves, I think Leah's pretty quick along the ground, but you know, Simone, Jen Beattie, Vicky Schnaderbeck, none of those players are lightning quick. And I do wonder if, you know, a quicker centre back in the future to kind of protect Arsenal against long balls and counters. I think that's something to keep an eye on. The only other thing I'm kind of keeping an eye on is Arsenal have gone wide a lot in the opening games. And that's made sense because we played teams that have clogged up the centre. But I hope that in, like, I don't know, 10 games time, I'm not sitting here going, God, we always go out wide. We never go through the center. I hope that's just a symptom of some of the teams we've played and not because we're neglecting that kind of that central zone and that we're just kind of hitting crosses in. So that's something I wouldn't say I'm worried about it, but it's just something I'm keeping an eye on at this point. Like I've got a little kind of thumbtack in that to come back to a little bit later. But speaking of things that we might come back to a little bit later, quite a few people, you know, people really not looking to dwell on this good feeling vibe at the moment. But I think, like, quite understandable, several people have asked variations of this question. So at Ariel AWFC, at Tony Adams FC, at Un_Case_Tet, at AWFC Please, and Maddie at AWFC BX Mads, all have asked variations of the same question about whether, you know, Arsenal have obviously not really had a pre-season. A lot of players at the Olympics come straight back into it. Lots of adapting to like a high press. And I think Emma Hayes said in her post-match press conference after the Chelsea game, you know, she was asked whether the fact that Arsenal had already started their season had played into their hands. And she said yes, which I think was fair enough. But then she said, you know, let's revisit this, you know, perhaps in the second half of the season. And so I guess the question from all of those kind of those tweeters is, do you see this kind of creeping up? Like, things are good now, but is there a danger of fatigue and injuries setting in with no pre-season and with a new high pressing style? And I guess what can Arsenal do to try and negate that?
I think it's definitely a concern. Just naturally, as you mentioned, you know, we did have the kind of early preseason with the Champions League, getting into that match fitness way earlier than a lot of other teams. I think it's, and the high pressing, of course, demands a lot of players on the pitch. It's, you know, nonstop pressing. As soon as you lose the ball, you need to pounce, and that does get tiring, and you do need to adjust your fitness levels for that. So I think it is a natural concern. You know, I would be lying if I said I wasn't concerned. But obviously, you know, we won't really know until the second half of the season. Then we'll come back to it. I think it's just a matter of Jonas being smart. I think that's, we just have to hope and pray that Jonas kind of is okay with rotating a lot of players. And I think with the Champions League, and realistically, if you want to go far in the Champions League, that depth and squad and that rotation is going to be crucial. And I think, you know, when you have, as we mentioned, you know, a player like Tobin Heath, I think understands that she's not going to start every game over other players. So I think that rotation is going to be big. I think we have the quality of players to be comfortable with doing those rotations. You know, obviously Jordan Nobbs and Caitlin Ford are still injured. You know, they still have some rotation. So when Caitlin Ford is on the bench, you know, you have Nikita Paris starting, or if you have Nikita Paris starting, you'll have Beth Mead on the bench. Like, it's really not a big deal to have that rotation. And hopefully you just have to hope that everything is going to be okay and there's no big injuries that are going to last a few months. I think the depth and squad at the moment is good. Most importantly, the quality of the depth and squad is good. So I think we can handle it well if we handle it smartly. But then obviously, you know, one or two injuries and you kind of lose that whole momentum of rotation and being able to freely do what you want to do with the players that you have. So I'm sad to say it, but I think it's just going to fall into luck and the injuries that we have and just take it from there.
Yeah. I think there is a lot. It's usually like you say, the size of the injuries. Under Joe, Arsenal, until his last season, Arsenal didn't get many soft tissue injuries under Joe. What happened was players got big knee injuries and that took 3 to 4 players out for like close to a year. And that made the squad look smaller than it was. I think there's two things here. Jonas brings up unprompted constantly the need to rotate, and he will do that. And I think one aspect, and I think a lot of us as Arsenal fans have probably got PTSD from the Joe era here, from the amount of injuries. And the team was rotated under Joe, I think more than people realise. But one thing he didn't really do that I think Jonas really will is substitute, in-game substitutions will be a big part of it. So if you look at his substitutions so far, those wide forwards rarely get 90 minutes. They're usually off after 60, 70. So it's very much, I think, a case, particularly with the wide forwards, of you will play 90 minutes, but across two games. You'll get 60 minutes of this game and you'll get 30 minutes of the next, roughly. So I think substitutions will form a really big part of it. I also think an element of pragmatism as well. So at halftime in the Reading game, when Arsenal are 3-0 up and they're doing lots of counter-pressing, I sat there and thought to myself, I hope this second half is a complete non-event and that we don't do the counter-pressing and we just control the game. And I think we did. Whether that was what Jonas told them to do or whether that was just the way it worked out, I'm not quite sure. But I think that element of pragmatism, when you're 3-0 up at halftime in a WSL game against the team below you, you don't have to go out and counter-press. As much as a new coach, you probably want to get that message across. I think the other thing is something I pick up talking both about the men's and the women's team, is this is an area that fans worry about a lot more than players and coaches do. I think the kind of, particularly in women's football, the level of kind of sports science and the stuff that goes into looking after them is really, really huge. And I know it sounds weird saying that as an Arsenal fan, given the last few years, but Arsenal have made a lot of appointments in this area over the last couple of months. New head of sports science in Gary Lewin, like new physios, like they've really beefed up on that side. And so I gather from Jonas that they're really, really aware of this. Obviously being aware of it and managing it effectively are two different things, but I think we'll see some things we didn't see under Joe. But broadly, I agree with you, Alex, a lot of it's luck and that's the end of it. And actually the last time Arsenal won the league, they got unlucky with injuries, but they still won it. They were still able to do it. And the reality is a couple of big injuries would stop Arsenal competing for the Champions League. It shouldn't stop them competing for the title because they still should beat most teams in this division. So I see why the anxiety is there and I share it, but maybe not quite as much. Famous last words. Anyway, on to, well, I think we kind of covered, there's a question from Adam Salter about how excited you are to be playing Barcelona. I think we covered that, but on a similar vein, I really like this question from Andrew Blair, who is at Yenar whatever on Twitter. And I think this is a really good question that I'm really interested in. And it says, do you view playing Barca as a real gauge for where Arsenal women are right now? How excited are you? With a new coach and a few new players, I see it as an exciting test to see what this team can produce against the very best.
I agree. I think it's, you know, you don't get the opportunity to play against, at the moment, probably the best team in the world. You don't get that opportunity to play, especially with Arsenal, who hasn't played in the Champions League last season. You know, they've been confined to just English opposition. Champions League, obviously playing against foreign opposition is a big opportunity just for that. And then you play against a team like Barcelona, and especially for Arsenal, who I think should definitely get one of the top two spots. So they're kind of playing against the best team in the world without having to compromise their qualification to the next round, if that makes sense. So I think Arsenal should just cherish the opportunity, to be honest. You know, at the end of the day, yes, you want to win, but like I said, you know, even if they lose both, I think they should still clinch that second place spot easily. So I mean, hopefully they do. That's really hopeful. That's just, yeah. So I think it's a really good opportunity, you know, with the Champions League in mind, but without it as well, to, as you know, as a question mentioned, the question mentioned, to kind of gauge where they're at on a outside of WSL perspective, of kind of know where they are in terms of player wise, tactically wise, you know, coaching wise, the effort, the kind of everything on and off the pitch that go into the preparation of the match. I think it'll be a really, really good gauge to kind of not, I don't think for us, I don't think for the fans, I don't think for kind of us to analyze that. I think it's more for the players and for them to see where they are and kind of maybe get confidence, maybe get motivation, whatever they want to get out of it. But I think it's more for them to kind of, you know, have the opportunity to play against, you know, Alexia Putellas as the best player in Europe at the moment. I think it's a really good opportunity. And then, yeah, looking from a fan perspective, from our perspective, I think it's just an amazing match of football to watch, you know, whether you're an Arsenal fan or whether you're a Barcelona fan or whether you're any fan of football. I think it's going to be one of the most entertaining matches that there is in the group stage. mostly just because of the football and the style of play and the players that, I mean, you're going to see, you know, Mapi Leon and Eden Paredes going up against Vivian Miedema single-handedly. You're going to have Leo Williamson trying to stop Alexia Putellas from running into the box. You know, the matchups are going to be incredible. The football is going to be amazing and it's just going to be fun. But yeah, I think it's just what Arsenal want to take. I think Arsenal get to play this game without any pressure. Yep. Of kind of securing that second place spot. So I think they just have to go out and enjoy it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I like the question because this is exactly what I thought about the draw. I kind of thought whoever we get out of pot one, we're probably looking at finishing second in the group. Maybe Bayern and PSG, we could have, you know, competed a bit more. Like Barca, I'm not expecting any points from those two games, but like they're the best club in Europe by far at the moment. So they are the benchmark. And I do think it will be really useful, really interesting. I guess there's an anxiety there about, again, talking about trying to convince players to stay. And, you know, if we don't compete in those games, then that perhaps, you know, that puts the club in a negative light maybe and says, well, this is how far we are away. But, I think if Arsenal can compete in those games, and they can say, OK, we know we're not the best team in Europe, but this is the standard. And, you know, we just beat Chelsea, who are Champions League finalists, probably the second best team in Europe, arguably, at the moment. So I think, but in that domestic competition, it is kind of difficult because you're surrounded by those teams all the time. Whereas Barcelona, it is as simple as we're playing the best team around. We're playing them twice, home and away. So it's not going to be a one-off. So, if, you know, we played them in a friendly a couple of seasons ago and lost 5-2 or 6-2. And we had loads of players unavailable, and it was a difficult game. Like we knew Barca were better than us, but it was kind of difficult to gauge from that game. I think over the two games here, you'll get a really proper gauge. So that's one of the reasons I'm excited about. Really, one of the many reasons I'm really excited about the draw. How about this then for a slightly different subject from Damian McBride at DP McBride? Where do you both stand on the issue of VAR in the women's game in light of recent incidents? So things like Beth Mead scoring against Chelsea when she was, a yard offside. Then you've got Reading, you know, with a goal against Manchester United where it looks like the ball crossed the line. And then, of course, this weekend, Spurs scoring their winner against Man City via a slam dunk, basically, from Rosella Ayane. So, lots of discussion about VAR, particularly with Sky Sports showing games now in England. So what practicalities aside, where does the balance lie between equality with the men's game versus keeping the matches fast moving for live spectators? What are your views on VAR coming into the women's game eventually?
I think this issue has to stay separately from the men's game, particularly just because we all know that all the WSL refs are part-time. I think that's the basis of everything, really. You can't really have this argument without stating that because, you know, VAR was introduced in the men's game because full-time professional referees were making these mistakes. And, you know, a lot of the coaches didn't like it. A lot of the players didn't like it. The fans didn't like it. So they had to take that extra step. But the extra step in the WSL at the moment isn't VAR, I don't think. I think the next step would be to fully professionalize the refs, improve the quality of the refs. And then if you want to introduce VAR after you're not satisfied with the quality of the refs, go ahead. But I don't think the jump from part-time refs to VAR is kind of the one that you want to be doing in women's football. I do think that goal line technology would be kind of the basic of having technology in women's football, just because, you know, goal line technology, there's no, it either went over the line or it didn't, you know, there's no argument against that. And I think it's a really good, I think in general, you know, it's, I think goal line technology is probably one of the smartest technologies that have been introduced in football because, you know, when you look at the referees, how far they are outside of the goal, like even the on-pitch referee, they're going to be at the top of the penalty box probably. And if you have like 10 players in the way, you're not going to be able to see it no matter what. So goal line technology, I think, should be introduced in women's football, professionally, definitely. VAR, definitely not, especially at the moment. I think, yeah, as I think everyone, I think most people do agree that I think the investment needs to come in the actual referees at the WSL, fully professionalize them, train them, and get that done first before you start thinking about introducing VAR. Because then you have the argument also of all the cameras and small stadiums and women's football, where are they going to go? You know, it's not the same as men's stadiums where you can put cameras wherever you want, basically in any point. You know, Boreham Wood, for example, doesn't have that many high places. You can see it on the matches where they stream it. So I think VAR is definitely, it's very unnecessary in women's football at the moment. So that's kind of where I stand on that.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. Why don't I answer this from a kind of more visceral fan perspective first? I hate VAR. It's really, really, I was a big skeptic before it was introduced, and I've really tried to not let it bother me and say, okay, it's here now. People want it. What you want and what everyone else wants are two different things. I hate it. I really hate it. It's really taken something very fundamental away from my enjoyment of football when I watch men's football. It just really has. And it's increased my level of disillusionment with it. So I kind of hope selfishly that the women's game never has it, because I see it as like a kind of a bit of an oasis away from all of that. I think you're right. Your point about developing the refs is absolutely right. That is the first step. Obviously, as you point out, there are logistical issues with the grounds being able to have it anyway. But the other logistical point with VAR in the women's game is that you've then got to train a load of other officials to use it. And we're already talking about like training referees just to be full-time in the women's game. So PGMOL only just took over kind of overseeing refereeing in the WSL in April. So it's going to take a little while for some of those improvements to come in. And they've only just starting to get some of the facilities that, you know, Premier League and Football League referees get in England. So it's going to take a little while. But yeah, on top of the actual technological logistics, you need three other officials. If you're going to have a VAR, you need three VARs. And the pool in women's football of referees is not big anyway. And if you're already talking about a pool that's kind of undertrained, undernourished, and we might as well say it, not quite good enough, I don't see how or where we pluck all these extra people from to operate VAR and to train up on it and things like that. So I think it will come. It will come one day. I do think it's probably a few years away. I'd personally, even putting aside my personal distaste for it, I'd really like, there are ways in which I think women's football can forge a different path to men's football. And I really think not having VAR could be quite a big selling point potentially, because I don't think women's football should always mimic men's football personally. And I actually think it being technology, well, not technology free, but VAR free, could be potentially a bit of a selling point for it, given that quite a lot of people are like me and don't like it. But yeah, I think it's at least a few years away before we'll see that. Why don't we wrap up with a last couple of questions? And I like this one from Yana at YanaWD on Twitter. Jonas obviously rotates a lot, but what do you think the ideal midfield looks like for Arsenal when Jordan Nobbs is back from injury?
I pondered on this forever when you sent me the question. It's really hard. I think that's kudos to all the new signings that's making this decision really, really hard. Because I think last season, I think flat out, I could have said that Jordan Nobbs, Kim Little and Leo Walty was kind of my favorite trio of midfield. Now this year, you know, you have to add Frida Manum and Manu Abuchi into that. And what I like about how hard this decision is that, you know, each player offers something very, very different. And you can't make a decision because of that. You know, you have, if you want a playmaker, if you want someone good at dribbling, then you put Manu Abuchi, but then you take out Jordan Nobbs, who has that creativity, that kind of calmness and kind of control in the midfield that wants to control the tempo and is able to kind of lead the way through the midfield. Then you have Kim Little, who's just Kim Little, who does everything. You know, you don't want to take her out of the midfield ever, but then do you want to put in someone like Frida Manum, who has a bit more speed, who has a bit more kind of finesse to go forward in that attacking phase of what Jonas wants to do? And then do you want to put her in for Leah Walty? Do you want to leave her for that? You know, give Leah a little bit of rest. So I don't think I can decide. Honestly, I really can't decide. I think I can I just put a midfield of five? That'd be great. I can't, it just, I think it's very dependent on how Jonas wants to play and how that, you know, As I mentioned, Leo Walty, Jordan Nobbs and Kim was kind of my set trio as of last season, but with these new players and the way they've been interlinking with the attack in particular has really, really impressed me. But I think I would say that I think Freedom Annam would be in my midfield. Yes or yes. I think I'll stick with one play. I'll just put one player in my midfield, but that's fine. the rest can be very, very, very game dependent. But I think Freedom Annam has kind of been my favorite signing so far.
Yeah, I spoke to Jonas a bit about Frida because she's played so many different roles kind of tactically. She's played as the six ahead of Lea Valti. She's played as an eight, as a 10. She's kind of done that thing against Chelsea where she almost came over to left back quite a lot to create overloads there. She's incredibly intelligent. I think she gives the midfield power as well. And that's one thing I think it's lacked in the last couple of seasons. I might duck the question a little bit as well just by saying, you know, those five players that you mentioned, any three combination of those five players. I have to say, I think Jordan is a player that we're sleeping on a little bit in terms of her talent and her ability because of the injury she's had and a stop-start kind of couple of years for her and with the pandemic and everything. I think she's such a good player and I think people have forgotten what a great player she is. And in terms of doing the high press and stuff like that and making those runs in from midfield, I think that, you know, once she gets back fit and playing again, I think we'll remember what a great player Jordan Nobbs is. You know, Lea Valti, you'd say, would probably be not quite an automatic pick because, you know, Jonas seems to like playing Frida as a six as well, and she looks perfectly good there. And, you know, Mana Iwabuchi can play in the wide positions as well. So, and I think the reality is, regardless of our preferences, that is what will happen. Those five players will rotate those spots. It looks like, I mean, Freedom Arnhem started every game so far. So's Kim. It looks like Kim is a bit of a lock there for Jonas. Like, even given the fact that she was at the Olympics, she's started every game so far, whereas Freedom Arnhem wasn't. And therefore, you'd think that maybe Frida, being young and not having been at the Olympics, might have played, you know, front-loaded her minutes a fair bit. But yeah, the others I just really see rotating just out of necessity, maybe tactical necessity. But if you were to put me on the spot and say, let's say they're all fit, which I don't think they will be for Man City, but let's say everyone's completely fit, firing for Man City at home, I think I'd go with Lea Valti, Kim Little and Jordan Nobbs as my three. I might then have Mana Iwabuchi in the front three, but that would be incredibly harsh on Frida, but Frida would come in for the next couple of games. Like, I really do think that's one thing we're going to have to get used to, that there will only be a couple of players that you can say, like maybe Lea, Kim, Viv, maybe Manu Zinsberger. It looks like he's made a decision that she's the number one, that those are the only four players you will definitely see. You will definitely see in most games. I think the rest is really going to be a movable feast. And I think that's the right way to go. Why don't we finish with one last question? And I guess on a similar vein from Aidan, and sorry, Aidan, I'm probably going to butcher your surname as well. But Aidan, do you know what? I'm just going to say your Twitter handle because it looks like an Irish surname and I know I'm terrible with those. So it's at Aidan House on Twitter. Given how our wingers and attacking midfielders have started so well, will Jordan Nobbs and Caitlin Ford find it difficult to break back into the team once they return from injury?
I think you've kind of started on that question there, Tim, when you were talking about Jordan. I don't think it's going to be hard for them just because of the quality, but it's about that rotation again. It's the matter of they're not, you know, it is, you know, Joe had his favorites and kind of you could predict a lot of the lineups mostly. But I think it is Jonas is kind of going to really, really heavily rotate based on the opposition, based on kind of the load overall of not just, you know, game to game, but just overall knowing that you're going to play Barcelona, you know, midweek, the weekend before that, you want to rest a few players, for example. You know, it's just like that balancing all that workload of everything. I think you'll definitely see a lot of more rotation. So I don't think, you know, players like Jordan Nobbs and Caitlin Ford don't really have to worry about not getting minutes. They're going to get minutes no matter what. I think that's just a given. It's just a matter of on the day.
Yeah.
There's not much we can say really, but I don't think, you know, as Tim mentioned, I don't think there's going to be a set starting 11. There's not going to be a set starting players of what Jonas wants to see. I think it's going to be dependent. And then you have players like Jordan Nobbs and Caitlin Foran who are definitely going to be starting a lot of games, who are going to be on the bench a lot of games. And that's just, that's not down to them individually. It's just down to kind of the situation that Arsenal find themselves in. But I mean, they're definitely going to be walking into a starting 11 no matter what. But then again, you know, the next game they're going to be benched. So it's, I don't think they're going to have a problem, especially with the style of play and kind of what to mention in terms of what he wants to see, you know, playing players tactically on the high press on, you know, you have someone like Jordan Knobbs, who's going to be really, really vocal and kind of lead the high press. You know, you're going to hear on the pitch in Bournemouth when, if you've never heard Jordan Knobbs before on the pitch, she's going to be a really big factor in kind of pushing everyone up into that high press. And then obviously Caitlin Ford, as you mentioned earlier, obviously she can replace Viv in that number nine role. So they're not going to have a problem going back into kind of having a big role on the team.
Yeah, completely agree. I think I'd just add two things to that. I guess there's two questions. One, whether he'll look to manage Jordan Knobbs in terms of her fitness, because obviously she's had a few injuries in the last couple of seasons, and whether he takes a view on that. Although Jonas was asked a similar question about Jen Beattie this weekend, given the injuries she's had and the cancer diagnosis she had last year. And he kind of said, look, one of the nice things for some of these players is that I've come in with no preconceptions and I'm just looking at what they deliver in front of my eyes, and what Jen is delivering in front of my eyes is great. So she's playing. So he might take a view with Jordan like that. He might be able to manage it. I mean, there'll be rotation anyway. I think the other thing, perhaps without a focus on these two specific players, that I'm interested to see, I'll be interested to see if there are any players perhaps that he inherited that he just doesn't end up taking to for whatever reason. And I don't know really who they'll be as yet. I mean, he hasn't played Leah Valti quite as much, which is not to say she's been out in the cold or anything, but he's rotated her a couple of times and we're not used to seeing that with Leah. But whether that's just because he really likes Frieda Marnham, there are a few things I think to keep an eye on. And one thing I'm interested in is whether as the season goes on, there just ends up being a player, because it happens, right? It happened to Beth Mead with Hagar Risa, for example. She went from being a lock, first choice in the 11 under Phil Neville, the manager changes and she's not in the squad anymore. That with the best will in the world just happens sometimes. So I'm not saying I think there will be a player, but it'll be interesting to see whether, you know, there's a player he inherits who he thinks, not really my type of player. And it happened under Joe as well. Like Joe kind of took Sari van Veenendaal out and she was very popular. Dominique Janssen was sold. These were popular players who were playing a lot. Sometimes players and managers, you know, it just doesn't work. So I'll be interested to see if that does happen with any of the Arsenal players. But I don't particularly have anyone in mind at the moment. But anyway, that's a good 60 minutes worth of content for you there. So why don't we draw it to a close there? We'll be back with, we'll do these mailbags monthly, I think, and we'll pepper in other pods on top. So we've got something else in the works, hopefully a little bit Tobin flavoured again for hopefully the end of this month, which we're working on. But otherwise, we'll do another mailbag in October and we'll keep doing the kind of two podcasts a month. First of all, thanks very much as ever to my co-host, Alex, who you can find on Twitter at, what's your Twitter handle again?
It's at AlexIbaceta23.
At AlexIbaceta23. My name's Tim Stillman, and you can find me on Twitter if you want at Stillberto. And we will be back with another episode very shortly. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for your questions, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.